You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The editors of Savera have made a bold and controversial claim in their magazine. They have named pasta the world's most perfect food, despite the fact that it's come under increasing attack as more people pursue carb-free and gluten-free diets. But they were so sure of their claim that they have devoted the entire October-November issue of their magazine to the ubiquitous food. And joining us now are Savera Editor-in-Chief Adam Sachs, a three-time James Beard Journalism Award winner, and Savera's Test Kitchen Director Stacey Adamando, co-author of several cookbooks with chefs from restaurants around the country, as well as a number of her own. I'm very pleased to welcome Adam Sachs and Stacey Adamando to our show now. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Happy
to be
here.
Thank you
so much.
Adam, you say the topic of pasta is overdone as canned spaghetti because there are already so many cookbooks with recipes for it in them.
Yeah. I mean, you said the word, you said ubiquitous in the intro. And I think the challenge and the fun of making an issue focus on pasta for us as magazine makers and cooks and enthusiasts is to take a topic that everyone knows and try to find new stories to tell about it.
And you do. You find in some cases even secret recipes. But did you find out where pasta actually was invented? Is it Italy? Is it China?
I think
the noodle versus pasta thing comes up a lot when we talk about pasta and its origins. And I think Italy and China sort of took the lead in terms of historically having the largest variety of pasta. So for example, in my research on filled pastas, we found that those two countries had adapted stuffed pastas, you know, far before any others. So I think a lot of the traditions certainly stem from there, but we're not exactly sure if they were limited to just those regions.
It's just like dumplings. People seem to, all over the world, have come up with the idea of putting meat inside of some kind of wrapper.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think that's part of the allure of pasta is that it's infinite variety and then sort of exacting specificity. That this is definitely an issue about Italian pasta. So we didn't try to cover the entire world. We tried to cover the world of Italian pasta.
So Stacey, you wrote an article about five great dishes that aren't very well known outside of their home regions.
Yes. Well, we thought, you know, a lot of dishes are familiar to the point of pasta sometimes having sort of a reputation as an everyday food. You know, spaghetti and meatballs are the very common things that Americans are used to serving. And then there are the common dishes in Italy that I think, you know, you hear about cacio e pepe or carbonara. You know, they all sound sort of familiar at this point. But we thought, well, what are the dishes that might be familiar to Italians in specific regions, but maybe, you know, totally unheard of to Americans or people outside of those regions?
It's been said that Italy is really a group of different countries because of the strong regional differences. Is pasta a staple throughout Italy, or are the pastas really different?
We're both nodding our heads a very strong yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing that was reinforced by a lot of people we talked to is how specific and local fresh pasta is to the north. And you know, I think Americans, we think of fresh pasta as maybe superior to dry pasta. And the wording is tricky because obviously the opposite of fresh is not dry, it's rancid or bad. But fresh pasta really is local to, you know, sort of a richer history or a richer culture in the north, and dry pasta is everywhere.
But when I've spoken to Italians about pasta, they say there are times when you want to have fresh pasta and there are times when you want to have dried pasta.
That's just their way of saying you're doing it wrong. That's their polite way of saying you're doing it wrong.
And there's, I think, a totally distinct art in the kitchen to cooking both. You know, many of the chefs that we spoke to or the actual producers of the dried pasta could talk for hours about the difference between cooking a certain shape of dried pasta versus another shape of dried pasta. It both, you know, seems like you could just plunge them both in salted water and turn your back on it until they're ready. But there's really a ton of thought that goes into how thick certain, you know, areas are and how fastly they cook or which sauces they get paired with and which sauces they're ideal for. So something that seems like, you know, a simple thing that you see at every supermarket, like dried pasta, actually opens up this whole can of worms when you get into it.
Let's not talk about worms in this conversation.
they
are very conscious of Americans. I ate at a restaurant in Rome where they had a very special kind of open ravioli, and the waiter said to me, Mario Batali was here and he ordered this twice. Puglia is known for its grano arso orecchiette. What does grano arso mean?
So this was part of those five beautiful pasta dishes we uncovered from different regions throughout Italy. And grano arso actually came up from a number of chefs in America who really did their research on pasta before opening their own Italian restaurants, and also from, you know, the members of Slow Food and the Southern Italian chefs that we spoke to. So this is a Pugliese specialty. It's actually made with burnt wheat. So the flour that's made from burnt wheat. Traditionally,
so that's what grano arso means, burnt
exactly,
wheat?
Exactly,
yes. Arachieta is like ear shape.
Exactly. Right. And that's a very traditional pasta shape in Puglia where this originated. So the legend has it that, you know, the farmers would burn the remaining wheat off their field at the end to sort of clean up the crop and prevent disease. And we're not sure exactly how it went from that to the kitchen, but it's thought that possibly some of the peasants nearby might have sort of scavenged from those fields and then used the ends of the wheat to make this sort of burnt wheat.
And how does it affect the taste? Pasta. Would I recognize it as a regular pasta?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first there's the color, which is this beautiful, very sort of on trend for kitchen color. It's gray. and it's really smoky and amazing. And we tried it in a couple different versions. So we made it with a flour that we toasted in the kitchen. And then we bought some store-bought versions from Italy. I mean, I think this is one of the fascinating things about pasta, too, is that it comes from this sort of the poor origins. But now it's sort of a trendy kind of pasta, and it's all over Milan. But yeah, the color and the smokiness really come through.
Did you find that the names of dishes tended to indicate something cultural or historical?
Certainly. I think even at times, without knowing the meanings of the words themselves sort of could suggest maybe where they were from. For example, you know, the plural of a lot of words in Italian might go from an O to an I or an A to an E. But in this case, you know, certain dialects, like in Sardinia, we featured some recipes called anzalatos or loriguitas, and they don't even, you know, the dialect sort of changed a little bit of the spelling of them. So I think even just looking at the words sometimes, you could sort of start pairing where something might be from or something about it.
And in the case of Sardinia, they have a grape, the Cananao, that I think is unique to the island. Would you find that these pasta dishes sometimes are also designed to go with the local wine or some of the other things that are local?
Absolutely. We did feature a recipe for loriguitas, which are sort of this almost like a twisted rope shape that's turned into a circle. So it's very complicated, and if you're going to try that recipe at home, it's fun to do with friends because it can take a while on your own. But that, for example, rather than, you know, focusing on the pomodoro sauce, which is seen in many of the regions, we focused on fresh orange juice from a chef there, and that grows locally. He uses the juice from cooking fresh mussels from the sea and the orange juice together to make this sort of sweet and delicious briny sauce, which is beautiful.
Well, aren't the tomato sauces usually associated with the south, and in the north more likely to be olive oil or butter?
Correct. Yeah, a lot of cream or fontina cheese sauces are used in the north.
Paola Abraini, is one of the few remaining masters of the art of making sous filandu. In 2016, didn't the famous British chef Jamie Oliver fail in trying to make that dish?
Yeah, so this is
he tried for 2 hours and it didn't work out?
This is a pasta that's made legendarily by a single woman on a single hillside in a remote village in Sardinia.
And even Barilla, the famous pasta-making company, can't figure out what you're
saying. Right, they sent Jamie Oliver to try to crack the code, and he couldn't do it. We sent a writer, Chris Collin, to go try it. And the only way to try it is to do this 20-kilometer overnight hike, a sort of pilgrimage to eat this pasta that translates as the threads of God. So that was just a perfect story, because it's about pasta scarcity and pasta history and pasta specificity and the culture around it, and that it also is, you know, a beautiful place in the world to go and eat.
But there's also a sense that they want to keep this secret. Didn't Abriani's relatives share her concerns over the commercialization of tradition? How do you feel about the counterargument that something like this dying out might be even worse?
I think the odds of that, I mean, if Jamie Oliver and Barilla can't can't figure it out. The odds that someone's going to sort of go copy it down in a notebook and open up their own Threads of God, you know, quick casual pasta store on a corner somewhere are limited. I think this is, you know, so many things are the same everywhere. We can get great Italian food in New York and Chicago and in LA, that it's nice that it's nice to be reminded that there are places anywhere in the world, and in Italy specifically, in this issue, where you go and there's something you can't have anywhere else.
So I have to go there.
You have to go.
And
you have to do the
she's
hike.
Alive still.
Well, yes. I think part of the reason that we did this issue was to just at least, you know, for ourselves, look into what these beautiful secrets were. And
is this really delicious? Is this really worth all of the going 20 miles overnight to Nuoro?
Well, I think the question is it worth it to you, right? To me, I'd walk 20 miles for a bowl of pasta anytime. That might be particular to me. But I think what we hope that we did and what we sought out to do was to, you know, call attention to some of these beautiful traditions in the hopes that more attention to them might help save them in the end.
We could all use some walking after putting together this issue.
That's
I was
true.
Speaking with Stacey Adamando and Adam Sachs, of Sever. The current issue, the October-November issue, is devoted totally to pasta. Have you gotten any feedback?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of really positive feedback. Yeah. I mean, anecdotally, I think people love pasta. That's not a surprise. I think people do like when we take a topic that they think is familiar, or that is familiar to them, that is ubiquitous in a lot of ways, and look at it in this sort of Rashomon style from a ton of different angles and find the stories there.
Stacey, tell us about the historical background of Emilia Romagna's All'Amatriciana. In your article, you mentioned that it was later adopted by the citizens of Rome.
Yes.
And Francesco Leonardi played a role in the whole story.
So this is a very beloved dish. We featured an interpretation of it from a very famous chef, Massimo Bottura, in Modena, and just the fact that we featured any kind of variation on it, we felt, and he agrees, was a little bit controversial. Something that is very, you know, the Italians are very passionate about is the getting the correct version of their regional dishes right. And to change anything, even in a very, very simple dish like this one, which is just made with pork fat, the jowls of the pork, pork cheeks called guanciale, and basically a simple tomato, crushed tomato sauce. It's very, you know, since there's so
it's
little
touchy.
To... Yeah, it's touchy. Touchy since there's so little that goes into it. To change anything about it seems
But there's a traditional version and there's a modern version.
There's a traditional version.
Or a Modena version.
Pretty much as I described. And the version that we featured was a tweak incorporating the balsamic vinegar of Modena and also a little bit of a lighter take on it. The chef actually spent a little bit more time caramelizing the onions in the sauce to add richness instead of extra fat and, you know, tried to keep the tomatoes nice and fresh and then also added this, like, nice, sweet, acidic flavor of the balsamic vinegar.
What do you say to people who are concerned about their diets? Neither of you are overweight.
Thank you.
Thanks for noticing.
But eating a lot of pasta means eating a lot of carbs.
Well, yes. And, you know, we actually have a chef who was telling us that he was training for a marathon and actually eating pasta with olive oil on it every day in preparation for that. So I guess many people, you know, can come to the defense of pasta and make a case that it does belong in a daily diet. I personally don't eat it daily. Adam?
I'm in a slightly different weight class than Stacey. But no, I think yeah, I think one of the through lines of the issue and Sever in general is that we're not necessarily telling you how to eat on a diet, but we're telling you to, we're hoping that you eat well, that you eat natural ingredients, that you eat things. So if you eat pasta with a lot of really good things, even if it's guanciale, if it's made from good pork,
right. Maybe,
fingers
well,
crossed, it's going to be
good for
you. The
way that the Italians eat as well, you know, pasta is part of a larger meal normally. So you have a small amount of pasta, you know, as a precursor to some other, you know, healthier, nutrient-rich items. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, many of the pasta dishes that they feature and that we feature in the issue have beautiful, you know, pieces of seafood, citrus, tomato, herbs, you know, lots of just stronger flavored cheeses instead of a lot of cheese.
You've worked on a lot of cookbooks over the years. Did you learn new things in putting this together?
Oh, absolutely. I was so excited when Adam came up with this idea. It's just an excuse to do a really deep dive into something, again, that I think many people not avoid, but try to not have too much of, or probably don't think too much about, because they sort of assume that they know the staples and they can go eat pasta in a restaurant if they want pasta. But it was wonderful to have an excuse to really go through the map of Italy, literally, and pick out fascinating pasta dishes to learn about.
A listener wonders if pasta was originally made with less refined flour. Right now you can, if you want to make your own fresh pasta, there are all these different options, including double O flour, the semolina flour, just regular all-purpose flour.
Yeah, we've got a story about sort of an ode to and in defense of dry pasta, and it's got some, we mentioned some pasta manufacturers in Italy who are using single grains and kamut and some earlier types of unrefined flour. So yeah, I think that was what pasta was, you know, before industrialization.
And even today, actually, the regionality of which pasta flour is most common is very distinct, in that the southern flours more often use a lesser refined, you know, semola or semolina. And places like Bologna, which sort of are, you know, thought to be, have more money and just be a little bit more refined in their cuisine.
A foodie
in general.
Capital.
Yeah. You know, they use 00 flour a lot there, which is the finest, the most finely ground flour. So those differences still exist.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. I've been speaking with Savoir Magazine's Test Kitchen Director, Stacy Adamando, who has written any number of cookbooks, but also is the former food editor at Every Day with Rachel Ray, really?
Yes.
And Food Network Magazine. And with the editor-in-chief of Savoir, Adam Sachs, who has previously served as contributing editor to Bon Appetit and Travel and Leisure magazine. So this gave you an opportunity to do a little traveling again.
This was, in a way, a pasta issue is a de facto Italy issue. And that was part of the fun, as Stacy said, to sort of look at Italy, you know, from the top to the bottom of the boot.
And we have some recipes posted on our website at wnyc.org/lopate. Thank you both so much for being on our show. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Lynn.
It was our pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.